Yes. Hello. Grab a cup, grab a seat, and welcome on in to Coffee and Cornbread. It's Trivia Tuesday. Time for one question, one guess, 1 minute. Today's question, we're going to go a little deeper here. I was told that they're too easy, so we're going to try and maybe change it up a little bit. I don't know. Let's take it back. I'm a history buff. So according to a legend, on this day in 1693, a French monk accidentally invented what famous sparkling beverage? Drop the guess in the Google. No cheating. We'll reveal the answer at the end of today's show. Just make yourself think. That's what that's for today. Welcome back. I'm so excited to be back. Had a crazy travel, but I'm excited to be back for Coffee and Cornbread. Now let's catch you up on everything you missed around the barn. If Auburn's going to take a step forward in 2026, it probably starts with one position group. On yesterday's Top Button podcast, Charlie Five explained why the offensive line has been Auburn's biggest weakness and why he believes that this coaching staff can finally change that.
Let's jump into it. There's no doubt that the number one question when you talk to any Auburn fan, I was just at an Auburn club recently, and when we started asking questions, the first question that's asked, we got to talk about offensive line. Any video, any podcast you do where there's any talk about offense, running game, quarterback, wide receivers, you're going to see a litany of comments that are all similar to none of it matters if the offensive line can't get it done. It really does feel like it's not just that the offensive line haven't been good. They've literally been a liability for several seasons now. And it's been a liability for multiple reasons. Sometimes you just haven't had the guys. Sometimes it's just been a talent issue. I don't think it's always been a talent issue, but there's been times when you just didn't have an SEC caliber insert position on the offensive line. Left tackle, right tackle, center. It's been something different, it feels like, and it's been multiple things for a lot of years. And then there's some times where I just don't think we were coached very well. I don't think you had a very good plan. And I'm really speaking to last season more than anything. Guys, it's not going to shock me. I know there's going to be a lot of people that maybe roll their eyes at this. It's not going to shock me if Xavier Chaplin has a really good year and is drafted reasonably high. It's not going to, I mean, you had two draft picks on the offensive line last year. I think the talent was there last year. The pieces were there last year that I think Auburn had no reason whatsoever to be so bad on the offensive line. It wasn't just that they gave up untimely sacks. It wasn't just that there were times where it felt like when you had to get those extra yards, you couldn't get it done. It was the ins and outs and basic stuff about being an offensive line and communicating. Just basic execution stuff, the pre-snap penalties, the not seeming to have an answer for noise. That's coaching.
Well, the biggest question isn't whether Auburn's offensive line has enough talent. I think we know that that is the case. It's whether this coaching staff can get more out of that talent that's already there. Because if Kyle is right, you know, coaching and scheme can cover up a lot of these deficiencies. You don't need five future first-round picks to have a productive offensive line. You need discipline. You need communication. You need a system that puts your players in position to succeed. If Auburn can simply go from being a liability to being a dependable unit, and a disciplined one at that too, it changes everything for Byron Brown, for the running game, and the entire offense. It's a big step. Can they do it? I hope so. Well, one of the biggest questions heading into Auburn fall camp that begins this week isn't about the starters. It's about the edge room. Chris Murray's return, Deshaun Womack's status, and the overall rotation could have a major impact on the Tigers defense. On On the recent Village Vice episode, the guys discussed why those questions matter so much.
My biggest question to Golish would be an update on Chris Murray. Mm-hmm. He was very clear about making him earn his way back.
Yeah.
Would love a status on that and just kind of what that process looked like.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. An important position and a guy who, you know, could play. So, I mean, if he's good to go for in good standing, how much of a factor is he in that rotation at edge? Is he at edge
right,
or an
edge? Right, I mean, especially because he didn't do any. I do think he's edge. Like, I think he's a stand-up guy. Because it like still, this is really the only thing that like Golish has done slash not done that I didn't absolutely love was how he handled this publicly. And look, I don't think what he did was wrong, but I do think like it wasn't his fault. Like he did everything that he thought he could do to prepare for what was best for him. And as soon as he had the chance to come back, he's like, heck yeah, I'm coming back. So that was really the only thing that I've kind of like scratched my head at with Alex Golish. Everything else I thought he's been absolutely awesome on. And so, yeah, what does that look like? And then, you know, I mean, he was asked about Deshaun Womack and, you know, some of his off the field activities that happened in the offseason. He was asked about that in Tampa. Does that play into the edge room at all? Or is that also handled? AG said that they handled the punishment for that internally, and they're still waiting for some of the legal stuff to happen. So how do those two things impact the edge room? I think that matters.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say that entering fall camp, the edge position is probably the biggest storyline to follow through. I think it is. If it's not number one, it's number two. Auburn's already has talent in the room, adding Chris Murray back to the mix. Getting clarity on Deshaun Womack's availability could completely change the rotation. That's the kind of decisions that may not grab national headlines, but of course we're going to have it here at the Barn. They matter when you try to build depth over the course of an SEC season. With camp underway, answers should start coming soon, and hopefully it's in the good direction. For years, Auburn's built its identity by winning close games. Yeah. Remember those times? It was fun. Well, lately, those same games have slipped away. On Afternoon Delight, our members-only podcast, the guys discussed why getting the winning mentality back to maybe one of the biggest keys to Alex Golish's first season.
Three-game stretch. I couldn't get it out. There was a three-game stretch last season of, I can't remember the order. I think it was Oklahoma, Texas A&M, then Georgia.
Yep.
All right?
Exactly what it was.
All three of those teams had struggle wins versus Auburn.
Yep.
All three of those teams went to the playoffs. Struggle wins, to me, used to be like Auburn's calling card. You know what I mean? Like, they were just going to figure out a way to kick that field goal at the end. At 2010 team, there was a couple. You had Kentucky. That was a struggle win. Had to win it, you know, with a walk-off field goal. Clemson, struggle win. Yep. Had to have them drop a game-winning touchdown in overtime and then miss a field goal to win that one. 2013, you had the Mississippi State game early in the year where you had the touchdown, you know, with little to no time left on the clock. Though that whole mentality that these teams have has seemed to be lost. Can they find it again? Can the standards that Golish is implementing to where it's like we're going to drill it down to where we know what we're eating every single meal, where we're going to be, doing fall camp to where we're going to go off campus to stay. Like we're like it's old school. Like we're going into the dorms so there's no distractions because there's no school for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Just nothing but football. Can those things lead to a mindset change to where Auburn can finally finish? And hey, we'll get that struggle win, but who cares? It's a win. And I'll take, you know, I'll take 10 of them.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Listen, a win's a win. Like, I know that there's a lot of gamblers that don't like that, but A win is a win as far as, especially in the Southeastern Conference. Now, you mentioned mindset. This is 100% mental, and it starts at the top down. I mean, it starts with the coaching staff pushing this every day, talking about finish, the players believing in it.
Well, when people talk about changing the culture, the identity, the standard, whatever the case may be, we've heard that so far under Alex Golish. It's exactly what they mean. It's not winning every game by three touchdowns. It's not having the perfect roster. It's finding a way to make one more play when the game is on the line. That's it. Grit. I want grit back in this program. Do you think it's been missing? I think it has been. One third down conversion, one defensive stop, one takeaway, one special teams play. They came. They've been there every now and again. But how about some consistency? How about it? These moments, they used to define Auburn football, and if Alex Golish can bring that mentality back, the Tigers are going to win a lot more games than people expect. And what's expected right now? 7-6? That's the floor of the expectations? Discipline, consistency changes that very, very quickly. Because in the SEC, sometimes the difference between a 6-6 season and a 10-2 season is simply learning how to finish. That's it. I think we've seen that over the last 5 years. I think we've seen it pretty crystal clear, actually. Well, could Auburn have two legitimate national award contenders on offense this season? That's because Byron Brown and Jeremiah Cobb were both named to the Maxwell Award watch list. On the Barn Social Hour on Monday, they explained why the recognition could be just the beginning.
Jeremiah Cobb, Auburn running back, and Byron Brown, Auburn quarterback, have been named on the Maxwell Award watch list.
Yeah, they have.
A lot of players get named on this watch list every year. But basically, the Maxwell Award is an annual college football award that is honoring and presented to the best all-around player in the United States. You know, it's, you know, not just offense, defense, it's everybody. And I want to see, actually, who the previous years are.
It wouldn't shock me. Like, I'm not shocked that either of them are on this list, but it would not shock me if Cobb has a, like, obviously last year he had a pretty good year. Obviously, he almost broke 1,000 yard rushing. I think he can break that this year, personally, with what Golish and the system were running.
In order to win this, like, your team's going to have to, like, you're going to have to be basically the face of college football that year.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's the only one player, and it's the best player all around in college football. I'm gonna go through who's won it since 2010, and you'll see how you have to be the face of the sport, and your team has to probably have done pretty well. So obviously 2010, you can guess it. Cam Newton won. Mm-hmm. No surprise there. 2011, Andrew Luck.
I'm not shocked by that.
Actually, every single person from now on that I list will be a Heisman finalist or winner. Because
The year that Luck won the award was the same year, correct me if I'm wrong, when RG3 won Heisman, correct?
No.
It was either 2011 or 2012, right?
RG3 won 2012?
It's somewhere in there.
Yeah. But anyway, 2012 is Manti Te'o, who was a Heisman finalist. 2013, AJ McCarron. 2014, Marcus Mariota. 2015, Derrick Henry. 2016, Lamar Jackson. 2017, Baker Mayfield. 2018, Tua Tagovailoa. 2019, Joe Burrow. 2020, Devontae Smith. 2021, Bryce Young. 2022, Caleb Williams. 2023, Michael Penix Jr. 2024, Ashton Gentry. And 2025, Fernando Mendoza. So, like,
some of them are Heisman winners.
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised. 2024, Travis Hunter didn't win. I was actually expecting Travis Hunter to have won that because, you know, he played both offense and defense. And honestly, like, that was the year that everyone thinks Ashton Gentry should have won the Heisman. I'm also in that camp. I am too. But I am kind of surprised just because, you know, all the hype was around Travis Hunter. I'm actually, like, I'm pleased to see that Ashton Gentry won this award and not, you know, Travis Hunter. But I am shocked that it wasn't. But yeah, like I said, you have to be the face of the sport to win this award. All of these guys, you know, are top or first round pick, top 10 pick, even that. I mean, literally all of them, literally every single one of them was a top 10 pick.
It's a fun one. It's a fun one to be named to. Only 81 players get named to this. Now it's only quarterbacks, running backs, and wide receivers. So you be the judge of that. But getting on the Maxwell Award watch list is one thing. Actually staying in the conversation is simply completely different. For Byron Brown, I think the path is pretty simple. It can be replicated in his production, what he had at South Florida, what he does at SEC defenses. If he can get anywhere remotely from that 3,000 and 1,000, 3,000 passing, 1,000 rushing, then I think you're in a really good spot to maybe even be seen as the face of college football. Jeremiah Cobb, on the other hand, he has a chance to make a leap too. Alex Golish's offense has a history of producing explosive playmakers, but I think you're more focused on him just maybe potentially pushing for being the leading rusher inside the conference. I think it's a win either way, just saying. If Auburn's offense reaches its potential, don't be surprised if both of these names are still showing up when you get the update to the award watch list later on this season. All right, that's going to do it. It's time for today's one question, one guess, 1 minute. The answer is, I think you got this one. I thought it was going to be tougher, but it's not. The answer is champagne. Yeah, that's right, champagne. According to a legend, the French monk Dom Perignon accidentally discovered sparkling wine and exclaimed, apparently this is what he said, quote, "Come quickly, I am drinking the stars." Now, historians aren't convinced that he actually said these exact words or accidentally invented champagne in the first place, but the story has become one of the most famous legends in wine history. But you, yes, you stick to coffee. It is too early in the day for that. All right, we'll have another Trivia Tuesday question waiting for you next week. If you have a fun one, you can drop in the comments or you can DM me on Twitter, so maybe the whole comments don't see that question, so they don't have an early head start. Thanks for pulling up a chair. We'll do it again tomorrow. That's right, we are back right here on Coffee and Cornbread.